Good afternoon. This is Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for October of 2021. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it'll be of interest to everyone. Dates to remember in October begin with Columbus Day, observed on the 11th, actual date the 12th, anything for a three-day weekend. The United States Navy was established on the 13th in 1775. United Nations Day is the 24th. Navy Day is the 27th. And we end October with Halloween on the 31st. We know that temperatures have been high as we have sweltered this summer. Unfortunately, the high temperatures will affect us in the future. Drought is blistering key crops in the U.S., further elevating the prices for staples like corn and wheat. This is apparent in late August on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, an annual event which farmers visit key growing areas across the grain belt to gather data on the coming harvest. Driving along State Route 14 near Verdigris, Nebraska, Randy Weiss turned to see a farmer harvesting hay. The piles were small. That farmer's sick to his stomach, Mr. Weiss said, who farms 800 acres of corn and soybeans in Lake Park, Iowa. He isn't alone. Farm incomes have been hard hit over the past 2 years. First, when COVID-19 shutdowns hit prices, and after then, hot, dry weather reduced output, limiting farmers' ability to cash in on rising demand and higher prices. Extreme heat is baking most of the country. North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, and Nebraska all contain areas of extreme drought, according to data from the U.S. Drought Monitor. North Dakota and Minnesota in particular are experiencing near record lows in soil temperature, according to data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. As a result, many crops planted this spring are wilting. Some 63% of the U.S. spring wheat crop is in very poor condition, versus 6% at this time last year, according to the Agricultural Department. The poor weather has caused the USDA to scale back its expectation for crop production for 2021, which in turn is causing domestic inventories to dwindle. The USDA's latest month's supply and demand report, the agency pegged ending stocks of corn, wheat, and soybeans at their lowest level since 2013. The impact of the drought is clear. There's no way around that, said Chip Flory, leader of the tour's Western Leg. Grain futures trading on the Chicago Board of Trade have had a volatile year, reaching near record levels in May. Futures in late August closed higher, with futures for corn at roughly $5.45 a bushel, soybeans at $13.32 per bushel, and wheat at roughly $7.23 per bushel. For row crops, prices might climb higher if bad weather persists. The ingredients for a demand-led market are in place as international markets rise, said agriculture research firm Ag Resource Company said in a note in late August. Farms elsewhere are getting scorched too. In July, the International Grains Council cut its forecast for global harvest in the 2021-22 season. The Intergovernment Agency forecast the world production of 2,295 billion metric tons, 6 million tons less than expected at this time last year. Brazil's second crop of corn grown in the winter had been greatly diminished due to drought. The winter crop is projected by the country's crop agency to be 60.3 million metric tons, down from 71.1 million tons at this time last year. Wheat crops in Russia are also suffering from the drought, causing forecasters to cut their outlook for wheat production there. In its latest agriculture supply and demand report, the USDA forecasted Russian wheat production at 72.5 million metric tons, down 12.5 metric tons from its estimate in July and below estimates provided by other firms tracking the region. This season, dry July weather and smaller wheat acreage was a game changer for the Russian crop, said Andrei Sizov, head of the Russian agriculture research firm SovEcon. In a note published in August, Mr. Sizov said the soil in wheat-growing regions of Russia was at its lowest levels in a decade. The drought is taking place around the world. Wheat, corn, and soybeans are not the only crops affected by unusually warm weather. Tomato sauce is feeling a squeeze, and ketchup can't catch up. California grows more than 90% of America's canned tomatoes and a third of the world's. Ongoing drought in the state has hurt the planting and harvesting of many summer crops, but water-hungry processing tomatoes are caught up in a particular treacherous swirl of problems that experts say will spur prices to surge far more than they already have. The drought threatened to imperil some of America's favorite ingredients, pizza sauce, marinara sauce, tomato paste, stewed tomatoes, and ketchup all hang in the balance. And this comes along not after a bizarre and completely unrelated shortage of pizza sauce and individual ketchup packets during the height of the food delivery pandemic. This also comes on top of already steep increases in the price of roots and vegetables, which have been rising since the coronavirus epidemic was declared last year. In a normal year, Aaron Barcelos, a farmer in Fireball, California, grows 2,200 acres of processing tomatoes. This year, he's decided to drop to 900 acres on his farm, which is on the border of Merced and Fresno counties. He's left the remaining acres unplanted, choosing to focus all of his precious water on almonds, pistachios, and olives grown on trellises, crops that command higher prices and represent already significant sunken costs. We get 8 inches of rain in a normal year. Last year we got 4.5, he said. We got 0% of our water allocation, which forces us to buy a lot of expensive water. It doesn't make sense to put it on tomatoes. This year's shortage of processing tomatoes has been a long time coming. Farmers already have been planting fewer tomatoes. From 2015 to 2019, fewer countries were importing American tomatoes, partly because the dollar was strong, which makes American tomatoes more expensive. Frank Muller, a multi-generational tomato grower and president of M3 Ranches in Woodland, California, described the market last year as disrupted. On top of the chaos of the supply problem, there's still a threat of coronavirus. Thousands of farm workers throughout California have gotten sick on the job. Outbreaks still occur despite robust vaccination pushes. Mr. Muller said there were very few infections among his farm workers. His tomatoes are mechanically harvested. Now he's worried about worker shortages, and all these problems are leading to fewer tomatoes. Muller said this is the first year processors didn't get all the tomato tonnage they wanted from farmers. This year will be some of the lowest inventory levels we've ever seen, he said. Tomato processors have very expensive facilities that can only do one thing. If they don't want to be out of business, they'll have to bid up tomatoes rather than leave their facilities idle. Those price increases are expected to be passed along to big companies that contract with processors, agricultural experts say. Companies that have deep ties to tomatoes have yet to signal price increases. Kraft Heinz declined to comment about the pricing for this story, as did Campbell Soup, which is a grower as well as a processor and uses about 2 billion pounds of tomatoes for its iconic soup, V8 beverages, and Prego and paste sauces. All these decisions were made before recent blistering record high temperatures in the tomato growing regions of California. Luckily, I don't care too much for ketchup. Shoppers will have a new low-cost option for buying groceries when Aldi opens its new store at the Eastgate Crossing in Chapel Hill. The German-based store will be the second anchor grocery tenant for the shopping center, which also includes a popular Trader Joe's. The project is awaiting a zoning compliance from the town, and no opening date has yet been set. Orange County records show that Aldi signed a 10-year lease in April with Eastgate's owner, KRG Eastgate Chapel Hill, LLC. The lease gives Aldi the right to renew its lease in 5-year increments over the next 35 years. In June, the town's Community Design Commission approved plans for a 25,530-square-foot store at East Gate Crossing between Franklin Street and Fordham Boulevard. The space is near Kipo's Restaurant and the Dollar Tree and across from the parking lot from Trader Joe's Grocery. Steinmart previously occupied the space but closed many of its stores, including the one in Chapel Hill. The Aldi store will also offer online ordering and curbside pickup, according to its lease. Its interior and exterior will be upgraded. The grocery retailer is in the midst of an expansion that would add 100 more stores nationwide by 2022. It now has over 2,000 stores in 38 states and is aiming to become the nation's third largest grocery retailer based on the number of stores. Several Aldi stores have opened in North Carolina, including the last few years in Durham and Wake counties. In Chapel Hills, Wegmans also opened a store earlier this year. That store, one of four added to the triangle in the last year, is just a 5-minute drive from Eastgate Crossing at 1810 Fordham Boulevard. Aldi now aims to hire more than 20,000 more workers this year. Jobs that Aldi is hiring for include cashiers, stockers, and associates at its more than 2,100 American stores and warehouses. The company will be drawing from a tight labor market in which openings have recently exceeded the number of people looking for work. Against this backdrop, wages have been rising, including for low-skilled workers. Following a recent internal wage rise at Aldi, workers in the positions will earn a national average of $15 an hour for store jobs and $19 an hour for warehouse jobs. The jobs come with health care, retirement, and paid time off, Aldi says. The closely held German retailer is known for simple, limited product offering and low prices. It has grown rapidly in the United States over the past decade as its streamlined model has found a footing with American shoppers. By shopping a pared-down product set that includes a large share of store-brand food, Aldi has reduced costs and increased inventory turnover. Lidl opened its first U.S. store in 1976, and its store count has more than doubled over the past 10 years. As it's gained popularity in the U.S., Aldi's model was picked up more competition. Trader Joe's is owned by a different branch of the German family that owns Aldi, has grown in the U.S. following a similar retail strategy. The expansion of Aldi and other similar chains has pushed traditional retailers to offer their own store brand products and to lower prices, exactly what other supermarkets have said. What is there about the triangle that seems to draw restaurants and dining rooms to our area? I'll share with you several examples. The last decade has done wonders for hotel dining. The rise of boutique hotels has helped to shake the stigma of continental breakfast, replacing it with restaurants and bars that sometimes leads a city's dining scene. In the Triangle, hotel dining is beginning to catch on, boosted by popular restaurants in Durham. Now one hotel looks to push the trend to Cary. This summer, Maiton was unveiled in Cary, rebranded from the Maiton Inn, and reopened after new owners bought the historic property out of bankruptcy, put money into renovations, and recently opened a new restaurant, Peck and Plume. The Maiton is now owned by Cary developer Bill Zahn, George Jordan III, Jordan Gustenhoven, and management group Early Bird Night Owl, who will run the hotel and restaurant. Craig Spitzer, who owns Early Bird Night Owl with Craig Shipley, said the dining will be a centerpiece of the hotel. Independent hotels are more interested in creating a unique experience, Mr. Spitzer said. It's not about serving the same cheeseburger here that you'll find in a Marriott in Topeka, Kansas. We're trying to be a destination with the community, not just with hotel guests, but those who live and work here. He said the name Peck and Plume is meant to capture the two sides of the restaurant's plan for dining. The Peck is the casual snack and drink side if you're feeling, say, peckish, and Plume is a more buttoned-up and polished full-dinner service, full dinner service diner. The intent, Mr. Spitzer said, is to appeal to diners as they are needed, whether for a weekend or an hour. We want to create a gathering place. It isn't just a place to stay, but that would welcome friends and neighbors. Veteran Triangle chef Steve Zanini returns to the Maiden for a second stint to lead the Peck and Plume kitchen. Whitney Gillum is general manager. The food was always well regarded, Mr. Spitzer said of Maiden. Chef Zanini does a lot of things real well. He's passionate about infusing international flavors into classic dishes and paying attention to sourcing ingredients and spices. Peck and Plume will be an all-day restaurant serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner, plus a weekend brunch. The menus are mostly a version of classics, biscuits and gravy, blueberry pancakes, and avocado toast at breakfast, sandwiches and bowls at lunch, plus duck quesada, fish tacos, and a double burger that also appears on the dinner menu. Dinner is more elevated with raw North Carolina oysters, bourbon chicken liver mousse, with sweet and sour blueberries, a grilled pork chop with tamarind and field peas, and a smoked tomato shrimp and grits. For Maiden, Mr. Spitzer believes there are few new creations in Cary, particularly the $69 million park under construction next door. We're thrilled to be adjacent to the downtown Cary Park, and aesthetically want to nod to the park and bring the outdoors inside, he said. But he also expects that Triangle's growing tech and business industry to have an impact. With Epic Games expanding down the street and Google and Apple adding new local offices, Mr. Spitzer expects some of those workers to move to downtown Cary. Part of the draw, he thinks, will be the wave of new restaurants, bars, and breweries in the past few years, including Pizzeria Follist, Hank's Downtown Dive, Sidebar, and Bond Brothers. Mr. Spitzer hopes Peck and Plume can add to that downtown trend. It's going to be spectacular. The park is going to create a new kind of regional draw that doesn't currently exist in downtown Cary. There's really a strong wave of support and a momentum in a lot of places to create something cool in the downtown in their community. Let's hope Mr. Spitzer's dream comes true. The most famous chicken tenders in the Triangle will soon have a restaurant of their very own. The Dankery in Durham, a late-night food truck with legions of fans, has plans to open its first bricks-and-mortar location. Owner Ian Burns announced on Dankery Instagram page that his first permanent restaurant is in the works. Our first bricks-and-mortar location is loading. The Dank will open soon in historic Hayti community, a former mecca for black businesses in Durham. The Dankery began about 4 years ago when Mr. Durham Burns would take orders through Instagram messages, fry them up in his parents' garage, be delivered to customers' houses, or picked up in parking lots. Their following grew quickly, and over the years, Dankery's had several parking lot residents around Durham where customers could line up and order trays of wings, tenders, and a chicken sandwich that once went viral on social media. The Dankery has built a loyal following in the Triangle and beyond and has been a frequent stop for Duke University athletes. Once in 2019, while in town for a Duke basketball game, former NBA superstar Dwayne Wade stopped at the Dankery for dinner, grabbed trays to go, and posed with the food while sitting in a private jet. For much of the summer, customers have found the Dankery at the Felix Shopping Center off of Fayetteville Street in Durham. According to the Instagram announcement, that's where the Dankery will make its home, with Mr. Burns posing in front of the former Webson's Bar and Grill. The new Dankery looks to have a full bar and indoor seating for the first time. The food truck will remain in service and is currently looking for its next bar or brewery resident. The signs first appeared last fall when Central Valley grape growers couldn't find enough workers to prune their vines. Now, a month into the harvest, it's becoming clear that California again doesn't have enough farm workers for the harvest. Work crew sizes are 25 to 40% smaller amid what might be the first year-round labor shortage in decades. People familiar with the situation, ranked the lack of workers as the industry's biggest challenge, even ahead of the drought. During the recent shortage of workers across many industries, the lack of qualified grape workers is unique. Growers' costs are up across the board, including from the state's regulatory shortening of the number of hours farm workers put in each week before overtime kicks in. This crop is by all accounts high in quality, as abundant as last year's, and enjoying historically average prices. But some of it is probably going to rot on the vine because there aren't enough people available to pick it. The worker shortage is real this year, so growers will make a decision to harvest their most profitable varieties, said Ian LeMay, president of the California Fresh Fruit Association Trade Group. Ultimately, you might see some fruit left in the orchard. That's a reality. Arvin area table grape owner Rick Deckard says it's been hard during the harvest keeping works on the site, especially when it's really super hot. This year, for the first time, he decided to hire a labor contractor instead of employing workers directly. He said it has saved his human resources-related costs by a few percentage points. His water supply is holding up, and the product looks good despite heat stress in July that took out 20% of its production. Prices this season started high, settled down, and might pick up again in October, he said. Grapes are one of California's most labor-intensive crops. Manuel Cunha, president of the Fresno-based Nisi Farmers League, has watched the shortage play out since last year's pruning challenges. It was followed by trouble getting all the plantings done in the spring, he said. Now it's a problem again as the harvest coincides with labor demands strong in other fruit, vegetable, dairy, and poultry operations. Quarantines have been a part of the issue, he said. Though some farmers assert workers are staying home and collecting government benefits, Mr. Acuna says he doubts that's common among farm workers, many of whom are undocumented immigrants because applying for assistance required a valid Social Security number. He said the solution is about bringing in more guest workers who he says are of limited help because they're allowed to stay for only a relatively short period. Instead, he advocates giving experience long-time grape workers a chance at a permanent residency through farm worker immigration legislature pending for the U.S. Senate. A restaurant known for resilience and fried fish will close after 40 years of business. Holt Lake Barbecue and Seafood announced the restaurant will ease into retirement. Owner Terry Barefoot, whose family opened Holt Lake in 1979, said the restaurant's last day would be September 18th. Over the past 42 and a half years, I've met a lot of friends and family, Mr. Barefoot wrote on Facebook. People have supported my family and supported Holt Lake Chicken and Barbecue. I'd like to graciously thank each and every one of you for your continued business and support over the years. It's time to retire. Situated between Smithfield and Four Oaks, Holt Lake Barbecue closed as one of Johnson County's oldest restaurants, serving generations of diners, mostly plates including fried chicken, chopped barbecue, or fried seafood, and southern side dishes like fried okra, lima beans, and Brunswick stew. In its 42-and-a-half-year history, Holt Lake burned twice. The first fire in 1981, only 2 years after opening, was ruled to be arson, according to earlier N&O reports. The most recent fire in 2010 completely gutted the restaurant, which was leveled to a concrete pad. And after the April fire, Holt Lake reopened in December of 2010 in time for holiday orders and parties. In his farewell post, Mr. Barefoot said, while the restaurant will close September 18th, previously placed catering holiday orders will be fulfilled. Thank you again for all the love and support over the past 42 and a half years, he said. I've gained an extended family. I'll be forever grateful. We wish Mr. Barefoot an enjoyable retirement. Overweight adults should now be screened for diabetes and pre-diabetes starting at age 35, a federal medical panel recommended in August, saying that getting tested at an earlier age could help people avoid serious health complications. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, an independent group of medical experts whose recommendations usually lead to insurance coverage of certain preventative tests, and Services has previously recommended screening to begin at age 40. The last update to its diabetes recommendation occurred in 2015. The change in screening recommends come partly from research showing that diabetes incidence increases at 35 years of age compared to younger ages, the panel said. It also took into consideration research showing that earlier medical treatment for newly diagnosed diabetes can be helpful in lowering the risk of heart attack and premature death. The panel said it also looked into studies showing lifestyle changes such as improving diet and increased physical activity reduced the progression of prediabetes to diabetes. An estimated 13% of all U.S. adults have diabetes, while 34% have prediabetes, where blood sugar levels are higher than normal, but not enough for a diabetes diagnosis, according to a 2020 report issued by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Diabetes can lead to serious health complications, including heart disease, liver damage, blindness, and kidney failure. People with diabetes are also at greater risk of becoming seriously ill if they get COVID-19. Being overweight or obese is the strongest risk factor for developing prediabetes and full-blown diabetes, the panel said. Other risk factors include a family history of diabetes and older age. In the 2020 CDC report, researchers found that around 21% of those with diabetes weren't aware or didn't report they had it, and only 15% of those with prediabetes said they were told by a healthcare professional they had that condition. All of this information is another reason to get an annual physical, including blood tests. If you grew up with slimy Brussels sprouts, mushy broccoli that smelled of sulfur, or the same peas and carrots week after week, you may have learned to eat vegetables because they're good for you, but not because you enjoyed it. The fact is, however, vegetables are prepared. How vegetables are prepared can ensure that they're both nutritious and delicious. Raw or cooked, vegetables are nutritional powerhouses, rich in vitamins, minerals, and fiber. Dietary patterns high in fruit and vegetables have been associated with a lower risk of cardiovascular disease, cancer, and diabetes. Yet 90% of American adults don't eat the recommended 2 to 3 cups of vegetables a day. There's a huge array of vegetable options to choose from, and consuming a variety of vegetables is the best way to ensure you're exposed to a wide range of nutrients. To cook or not to cook, eat your vegetables the way you enjoy them most. Raw vegetables provide more of some nutrients than the same vegetable cooked, but less of others. Cooking can help break open the cell walls to release some nutrients, explained Diane L. McKay, Ph.D., assistant professor at Tufts University Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy. For example, the availability of lycopene in tomatoes and other carotenoids in carrots, spinach and broccoli, mushrooms, zucchini, squash, and peppers will be higher when those vegetables are cooked. We've run out of time for this episode of Thought for Food. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the North Carolina Radio Reading Service. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138.